Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are... This is Eric.
It is better to be truthful and good than to not.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex? Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is true.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen, and not a one of you is prepared for it.
And they are sometimes joined by guests like...
This is Travis.
I had to stop her from screaming.
And Diane.
If you men only knew.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 2001 movie Rockstar, directed by Stephen Robert Herrick.
Who?
Well, as it turns out, he has quite a long history. I mean, he should be our favorite director because he is like a director for hire, and he's a good employee. Shall we dive into Rockstar, or we have stuff to talk about beforehand? This is from the All Movie Guide. And I don't know, it could have been written by Stephen Herrick, I don't know. But it actually has a really nice point to it. In 1986, he directed the cult horror film Critters, followed by Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Then he directed Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead in 91, and then The Mighty Ducks in 92.
Wow.
And after The Mighty Ducks, he actually worked for Disney for quite a while. He did The Three Musketeers in 93. He did the live-action Glenn Close 101 Dalmatians, and he did the Eddie Murphy comedy Holy Man. He also directed Mr. Holland's Opus.
No way.
Yep. And then in 2001, he directed Rockstar, which, by the way, was produced by George Clooney. He also has directed a bunch of stuff straight to DVD, and then currently he's directed, I think, three films for the WWE Films. Because they've branched out into films.
So like the John Cena action movies?
Yeah, I think there's one called The Chaperone, which I think it is a John Cena movie.
This guy's a grinder. I love it.
I love it too. I'm telling you, he's my favorite director now. Mr. Holland's Opus? Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead?
Critters. I remember watching that with you in our rec room back in the day.
Absolutely. The Mighty Ducks. Bill and Ted. I mean, you know, although I've never seen Bill and Ted, I hear it's good.
It's subversively funny.
Yeah, so I think that's great. By way of introduction, tell me why we're watching this movie. This was a Drew pick.
This was born from the discussions we had. So whatever led us to watching Almost Famous, to talking about Thin Lizzy, also led me to reminisce about this movie. I think somewhere along the way, we mentioned Judas Priest in one of our podcasts, and that reminded me of this movie, which has always been a guilty pleasure of mine. Because I guess I'll just say it now. I don't think this is a great movie. I think it has a lot of problems. But I love it. I find it totally enjoyable to watch. I even love the music. I'm not even sure if the music in this movie is supposed to be a parody of like the 80s heavy metal, or if it's actually supposed to be a good version of it, but I love it. So I wanted to talk about it because I was in the headspace of being nostalgic for music.
Yeah, well, I'm glad because when I watched it originally, I think my initial reaction was like, meh. But back to the director here, one of the things that they say in the All Movie Guide is that, and I'll quote, Stephen Herrick is a director who excels at comedy, and the key to much of his success lies in his penchant for interesting three-dimensional characters who transcend comic stereotypes and sincerely draw the sympathy of viewers. Whether his characters are as exceedingly dumb as the protagonist of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, or as painfully sincere as a singer from Rockstar, Herrick has a way of making audiences care about them that renders the humor in his film so effective.
He didn't write that. His mother wrote that for
him. Well, maybe so. But I thought it was pretty apt in this case. I mean, I thought that Chris Cole, the Mark Wahlberg character, was kind of sweet.
Yeah, he was likable.
He was a true believer. There were some parts of the movie that they really kind of I had questions about, but we will get to them presently. But yeah, I was very happy. And part of it, again, maybe it was no longer a guilty pleasure, but all of those songs from that time. I mean, there's a ton of songs that, like Kiss's Lick It Up.
Yep.
It's not a song that is going to be probably on any greatest hits albums. Maybe it is. I don't know. But it was in the Vinnie Vincent Kiss period. But I had the album.
Yeah, there were a couple fun Def Leppard songs. One of them was really good. One of them was not.
Yes. There's a little Bon Jovi, some Motley Crue, some Everclear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I really dig the song at the end of the movie. That's actually sung by the dude from the Verve Pipe.
And that's Colorful?
Yes. Yeah, I came away from this movie, this was back in the day, when I would illegally download music. Big catalogs are hard to come by, but I definitely snagged We All Die Young and Colorful after I watched this movie, and they were in heavy rotation. I have since gone back during part of my illegal download penance and purchased this soundtrack. So I have official copies of those songs now, but after watching this movie, I've been listening to those songs all week, been forcing my wife to listen to them when we were in the car together, and surprisingly, when We All Die Young came on, she's like, "Oh, this is from Rockstar. We should watch that movie again."
Oh,
she has fond memories of that movie.
Oh yeah. Well, did she watch it with you in preparation for this?
No, we saw it in the theater together.
No, I mean recently.
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
Well,
I mean, it's been on TV from time to time, and whenever it's on TV, I'll get sucked up in it. So I'm sure she's seen it more recently than 2001.
Oh, it's so fun. And it makes me remember a bunch of stuff, including that Jennifer Aniston is actually really good sometimes.
Yeah, no, she's
solid.
When she tries, she's pretty good.
Yeah. Shall we just dive in?
Yeah, let's do it.
Do you want to go through the history of this, the real story behind this movie?
Sure. I'm sure you can speak to that much better than I can.
Well, I just happen to have a quote that this was inspired by the real life story of Tim Ripper Owens, who is a singer in Judas Priest cover band, who was chosen to replace singer Rob Halford when he left Judas Priest. And it's similar, although Rob Halford left on his own, and it was a little bit before they replaced him. It wasn't quite as portrayed in this movie, obviously. But the part about the former lead singer for Steel Dragon being kicked out of the band because he was gay is a direct shot at Rob Halford.
Was he actually kicked out because he was gay?
Well, they had creative differences. And that's what he was saying. You're kicking me out because I'm gay. And then you have Chris and his girlfriend, whose name I can't remember now, Jennifer Aniston. I'm sorry, Emily, who are like, you're gay. And that's one of the better lines in the movie.
Hey, guys. We were just wondering if the incredible voice on the tape really belongs to you. No, that'd be you, Bobby.
You think you can bring in some child to replace me, do you?
You want to do your own thing, we're going to let
tell
you go.
Tell me what you're doing here. You're firing me.
Look, calm down, Bobby.
You calm down, you wanker. It's because I'm gay, isn't it?
You're gay?
No. I got both my nipples pierced, bought a house in Morocco because I'm John fucking Wayne. Have you ever listened to the lyrics of Stand Up, hmm? Did you really think that Kim was a girl?
Kim was a guy?
Yeah, Kim was a guy. He also happens to be my lover. Much to the horror of these closeted sausage jockeys.
Oh, Bobby, as if we give a toss who you're buggering.
Whatever, Bob. Just keep your dick away from me, though.
Stop it, man, I tell you. No, what bothers us, Bobby, is you don't turn up for recording sessions. You missed half the gigs on the last tour. When you did show your attitude...
Look, so I am Steel Dragon. Without me, you're nothing.
Give us a break.
You'll be playing for coppers in the tube without me. We'll see.
So, did you think Stand Up and Chat was really about a woman?
Kim? It's so funny. So we get introduced to Chris Cole, Mark Wahlberg. And he is a fanatical admirer of a 1980s heavy metal band called Steel Dragon. Now, by day, Chris is a photocopier technician, and by night, he's the lead singer of a Steel Dragon tribute band, not a cover band, called Blood Pollution. That name is from a Steel Dragon song. Here are the members of Blood Pollution. Mark Wahlberg is Chris Cole, lead vocals. Jennifer Aniston plays Emily Poole, the manager. Timothy Oliphant is Rob Malcolm on guitar.
He's so young in this movie.
Everybody, by the way, most of the musicians in both bands are for real musicians of bands in the 80s that were heavy metal bands. Blas Elias, he's drums in Blood Pollution. He's a drummer for Slaughter. Nick Cantonese is Xander Cummings' guitar, and he was a guitarist for Black Label Society, which is one of Zakk Wylde's bands. And then the bass player...
Zakk Wylde of Steel Dragon?
Yes, Zakk Wylde of Steel Dragon. Brian Vander Ark is the bassist, and he's the singer and songwriter for the Verve Pipe.
No, I didn't even know that was him.
Yeah, he plays bass. But by the way, we get to also see a little bit of Chris Cole's family, including Joe Cole Jr., who I swear to God, I thought was Dominic West. I thought Dominic West was playing two roles in this movie.
He has a little bit of a McNulty vibe.
Yeah, that's Matthew Glaive, who's been in a lot of stuff too. So there's this great scene where they're setting up this concert for their cover band. And it's the cool thing about this movie is all of the scenes are repeated later in the movie.
Themes. There are themes in this movie that come around again at the end.
Yeah. Well, the setup scene for Blood Pollution is repeated directly in the setup scene for Steel Dragon later.
Yes.
So Blood Pollution has some problems. Guitarist Rob, Timothy Oliphant, is not playing note for note like Chris demands. And they get into
during a practice session, he doesn't get the squeal right. It's more of a ping.
Yes. And then when they play live, he goes off and he does the extra squeal. He does the squeal like on every measure or whatever.
Yeah, well, there's some important setup before they get to their concert.
Okay, go ahead.
After practice, they all get together to go to a Steel Dragon concert. And there are a couple important things that happen there. One is that on the way in, they're putting flyers for their tribute band on everybody's car. And then in the concert, Chris Cole gets right up to the corner of the stage and he is singing along so well and so loudly that the lead singer of Steel Dragon actually takes notice of him while he's trying to perform his concert. And that will come up again later. And then on the way out is one of my favorite scenes. They run into a rival cover band, tribute band.
A rival Steel Dragon tribute band.
Yes. And then And each rival band member is dressed as their Steel Dragon counterpart, and it's both funny and kind of sad to watch it. You were a pretty big Judas Priest fan, but you certainly never dressed up like Rob Halford that I can remember.
Oh no. No.
But these guys were nuts. So there was a confrontation between the two bands, which actually ends up in a physical fight. So these Steel Dragon posers, each counterpart is fighting the other. And there's the great line where the rival guitarist, Timothy Oliphant, and his other guitarist poser are fighting each other, and they're complaining that they're ruining each other's cape.
Well, that's the thing, is it's all this slap fighting. Because, you know, heavy metal bands or, you know, hair metal bands are particularly ridiculous. I mean, I guess no more ridiculous than if a bunch of people in MC Hammer parachute pants got into a fight. Although,
yes.
Perhaps it's racist to think so, but you'd think at a certain point guns would come out during that fight. In this fight, it was strictly a slap fight.
Right.
And then during a live performance, that's when Rob, Timothy Oliphant, and Chris get into a physical fight in their own concert.
Chris ends up unplugging him and then trashing his amp so he can't play anymore because he's not playing it perfectly.
Yes, which is no bueno. So, and that's where there's the next day he arrives at their rehearsal space. And now he finds that the singer of the rival tribute band has been hired to replace him. And he's out of the band, man.
And it's so juvenile, in a perfectly accurate way. Because it's not just like look, we're tired of you. This isn't working out. Your vision is different than our vision. It's better for us to go separate ways. It's more like, look, he brought his own amps and they're great.
Yeah. And then of course, Chris has to speak, I'm taking my mic cord with me, my mic stand. He's dragging it all out.
And did you recognize the replacement singer?
I did not.
He's the lead singer of Third Eye Blind.
Ah, I did not know that. So Chris leaves the band. Yeah, he's kicked out of his own band. And he's depressed. He's in the dumps. And he's sort of committed to a certain look, at least, if not a complete lifestyle. But then he gets a phone call from Kirk Cuddy. That's Steel Dragon's founder and rhythm guitarist, played by Dominic West from The Wire.
And maybe the only role I've ever seen him in his original accent.
Yeah, if that is his original accent, I can't imagine it wouldn't be, but it's hard to tell.
Well, at least a closer version than his American accent.
Oh, definitely, yeah. And Kirk offers Chris an audition for the band. And of course, Chris doesn't, he doesn't believe that he's on the phone anyway. So that's kind of a fun scene.
Yeah, Cuddy doesn't actually tell him what he wants him for. He just tells him that he's seen a tape of him singing, and there's a first-class ticket waiting for him. So, yeah, Chris has no idea why he's being summoned by Steel Dragon. But things are looking up now, at least.
Yeah. Well, and Chris calls his girlfriend, Emily, and they exchange the first-class ticket for two coach tickets. And they go to beautiful Los Angeles, California. And they're met at the airport by a sultry brunette played by Dagmara Dominicic. She plays Tanya.
And Tanya turns out to be more than what she seems.
She does, indeed, in a pretty clever scene. And they go and they meet Steel Dragon. And let me tell you the members of Steel Dragon. Bobby Beers is the lead vocals. That's who Chris has been emulating. He's played by Jason Fleming, from, among other things, Snatch and Spice World.
And Layer Cake.
Ah, I did not know that.
He's Crazy Larry.
Oh, you're right. He is Crazy Larry. How did I miss that? That's funny. Timothy Spall plays Mats, the road manager. And he's great. And he has a particularly, like, sort of fat, rat-like quality. And by the way, he was in Quadrophenia as the projectionist, so a small role. But Dominic West is Kirk Cuddy, the rhythm guitar. He's from The Wire. Jason Bonham is the drummer, John Bonham's son. Zach Wilde was the lead guitar, and we saw him when he was with Ozzy Osbourne, and we actually saw him at a concert in Anchorage.
Yes, we did. The No More Tears tour.
Yes. And Jeff Pilson is the bass player, and he was the bass player for Dokken.
That's some good street cred for a Steel Dragon.
I'm telling you. So they have this lovely scene where Bobby Beers gets fired by Steel Dragon, and he takes his mic cord also.
It's really sad. I mean, they are auditioning new singers when he comes in. It's like, what's going on?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's not great. But it's fun because Chris and Emily are just happy to be there at this mansion that has all this memorabilia.
Yeah, and they're just sitting there like wide-eyed little kids watching bombs being dropped by the dueling members of Steel Dragon.
And, well, he sings. And, you know, he's a little nervous at first, but then he manages to belt out. By the way, it's worth noting that Mark Wahlberg, although he is a professional musician, I tend to forget that, he doesn't actually sing the songs in this movie.
Probably for the best. But.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's all the Miljenko, Matchevic, and then at the end, Brian Vander Ark sings that last song that you like.
Yeah, but this scene, this is one of my favorite scenes in the movie because it's a moment, and it's a great moment, and it's cheesy. But you said the correct word before. It's so sincere, and it's great. It's Chris gets in the booth, and they start playing the intro for We All Die Young, and he's so nervous that the first time around he totally misses the cue. Then he tries again, and it's not great. And he has to do it one more time, and he can tell everybody's getting impatient. And he steals himself. He gets that look in his eyes, and then he just belts the crap out of the song. And it's so great. I love it.
Yeah. Oh, this is a sports movie, except the sport is rock and roll.
Yeah, and that was definitely the underdog moment.
Missed your cue, mate.
Yeah, sorry, Ken.
You do know the song, yeah?
Yes, sir. Sorry about that.
All right, well, we'll pick it up just coming out of the intro.
I'm sorry.
We're wasting our time here. Yeah?
So, sorry, would it be okay if I was, could I start it one more time?
All right, yeah, go again.
Sorry about that.
Risk my soul, taste my life, for my bread. My time lost in space. Am I dead? Oh, man.
I could watch that scene over and over again. It was so great.
Well, it's followed by a scene that I actually kind of like. And that's when he's introduced to the press as the new singer. They have christened him Izzy and given him sort of a fake accent.
Yeah, that's fooling nobody.
Oh, no, no.
I'm telling you lot, we combed this entire planet looking for someone who is heavy enough to pull this one off. And we found a star waiting to be discovered. When this guy starts to sing, you're going to forget all about Bobby Beers, all right? I promise you.
Izzy, is that your name, Izzy?
Yeah, the name's like Izzy's Revenge.
Oh, shit. Izzy? I'm not calling him Izzy.
Shh.
Can you hit all the same notes that Bobby Beers can hit?
That's why I'm in the band.
Stand up and shout!
My choir teacher, she always gives me some really cool exercises.
Eats a lot of pussy, that sound.
Oh, yeah, I eat a pussy.
Hey. Classic.
My father, my son.
Oh, it's my boy.
Hey, guys. So how was that?
It was so good, so comfortable.
I kept messing up on my English accent.
It was great. Nice way to handle that pussy line, by the way.
Whoa. Whoa. What was I gonna do? I can't argue
Izzy,
with you.
Izzy, honey, don't worry. I'm gonna make an honest man out of you.
And then a little bit later, he's practicing his accent by repeating that line, how he eats a lot of pussy. It's just really funny.
They had a couple takeoff jokes from that moment. The first one was when they cut to his family watching the press conference.
Yes.
And his mother turns and looks at his father and says, like father, like son, in front of their other son.
Well, that's the funny thing is that his brother is a cop and square, but his mom and dad are both fully on board with his rock and roll dreams.
Yes. Later, they get even more mileage out of that. Because when he's practicing singing in the mirror, Emily yells at him to either get in there and start doing it or to shut up.
Which is a lovely kind of genuine moment.
Mm-hmm.
He goes and does his first performance. And he's all full of nerves. And there's a fantastic scene where he falls off this metal staircase and smashes his head. And he thinks that, that could have been the end of the whole thing.
Yeah, and the way it's executed in the movie is great because it follows his perspective. So it's third kind of third person on him. And then when he falls, it switches to his perspective and, all the music is muted and can't hear anything. And, the angle that you're seeing is all off cause he's on the ground standing up and he gets up and everything starts to become more clear and he starts to hear the music and then he just goes for it and keeps going and he owns the moment.
Absolutely, because he's got that special something.
And he finishes the song with blood pouring down his face from a gash in his head.
And he's digging it, and the band is digging it, and it's just great. And the Matt's character is like his mentor, kind of the voice of reason, sort of. But
that's the manager guy?
Yes. And so he goes on the road with Steel Dragon. And this is where Emily finds out that she can't go on the bus with the band. She has to be in the car with the wives and spouses or whatever. This, by the way, let me introduce the spouses. So we have Rob's girlfriend, Kara Zeidecker, who I don't know anything about. But then we have Heidi Mark as Kirk's wife. And she is playmate and former Mrs. Vince Neil. We have supermodel and former Mrs. Rod Stewart, Rachel Hunter, as AC's wife. We have Carrie Stevens, Godey's wife, playmate and former long-term girlfriend of Kiss drummer Eric Carr, Carrie Stevens. And then we have Amy Miller as Jorgen's wife, and she used to be a Power Ranger.
Go Power Rangers.
Oh, yeah. The spouses are fantastic.
Now, was this bus trip before or after the big party celebration that turned into a very uncomfortable morning?
I believe that was before. I could be wrong.
Yeah, no, I think it was after that first concert where they were celebrating, because Emily was still in her her concert sparkly face get up. Yeah, they're celebrating, and the band's getting Izzy drunk, and Tanya, the publicist lady, takes a liking to Izzy and realizes that he's a true blue boyfriend. So the only way she's going to get to him is to also hook up with Emily. So they get everybody drunk, and what follows is surely a night of tour debauchery. And Izzy wakes up with no pants. And Emily wakes up naked in a whole other room trying to buy other people. And they're both trying to make their way out of whatever hotel they landed in. And Izzy finds his pants. They're being worn by Tanya as she is relieving herself in the morning, doing so standing up in front of the toilet.
Yes, because Tanya is more than she seems.
Very much so. And now it makes more sense about how she used to date Bobby Beers.
Yes. I had to look to see if the actor playing Tanya was actually a female or a male, just to double check. It's a female, but still. Again, this is 2001, so can't get all crazy.
Right. Whole different world back then.
Yes. Yeah, after that night and then the uncomfortable ride with the spouses, Emily decides that that's just kind of too much for her, but she'll see him at the end of the tour when it reaches Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, well, she hangs on long enough to develop enough of a relationship with one of the other wives that they decide to go into business together.
How did I miss that whole plot segment?
I don't know. That's the reason she was leaving and going to Seattle, is because they decided together that they couldn't take following the band around, and they wanted their own life. So they were going to go hook up and start a business.
I think
it's Doe's wife.
Okay. Huh. Yeah. I neglected that whole subplot.
Yeah. So there was a little bit of a concert montage where Emily had a moment with was it the one of the, was it the bassist or the drummer as he was getting dialysis, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and he basically told her, look, you got to let Izzy do what he needs to do. It doesn't mean he doesn't love you.
And she seems, if nothing else, stoic about that.
Right. Yeah. Jennifer Aniston, as you mentioned, did a good job in this movie. She's very sympathetic. She's very understanding, but she did not play it dumb.
Oh no, she's quite often the only adult in the whole scene, of any scene she's in.
Right.
I mean, she was the manager of Blood Pollution, and you know, so she is the businesswoman.
Yeah, it's one of the things that's kind of wrong with this movie is that she's actually way too good for Izzy.
Except, I don't know, I can see some of that in the real rock star life.
Yeah, but she knows him as Chris Cole, the loser Bobby Beers poser. She should never have hooked up with him because she was way beyond him. But yeah, in a heartbreaking scene, she does tell him that she's going to leave and see him in Seattle because she wants her own life. Not that they're breaking up, just that she's not going to follow him on tour.
Yeah. So eventually... And actually, it's not the end of the tour, really. It's just a stop in Seattle. So the Steel Dragon gets to Seattle, and Emily arrives at the hotel, as this had been previously arranged.
That's after, like, the rock star montage, right? Where they're...
Yes.
They're hitting all the legendary antics, you know, throwing televisions out windows, super gluing furniture to the ceiling, driving motorcycles through the hallway.
Oh, and the Batmobile is somewhere in there.
Right. Yeah. Izzy buys a Batmobile and races it. Very silly stuff.
Yeah. But just fun shenanigans. Almost like like this was a montage from one of the Beatles movies.
Sure. I've never seen a Beatles movie.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if I've seen anyone all the way through. Perhaps not. So Jennifer Aniston gets to the hotel and two things are funny. The elevator ride up with all the groupies.
If I get to be with Izzy, I am going to shit bricks.
Well, yeah, that'll make a lasting impression.
Do you dance at Chubby's?
No.
Well, you should. You have a killer body. You know, it's not totally nude there. I mean, we have to wear G-strings, so the guys, they respect us way more.
Oh, wow, yeah, you know what? That is so true. I mean, nothing says respect like cramming a strip of Lycra right up your ass.
Fucking Ava.
Yeah, because the girls are talking about having to get in line to do Izzy.
And the one girl, she has to be first or at least close to first because she's got a shift at the strip club at 9:30.
Yes, and she's very open about her time constraints.
And of course, when they get up to the floor that the band is on, Izzy is so drunk, he doesn't even remember that she's supposed to be there or know what city he's in.
Yeah, and actually a really good bit of acting by both Mark Wahlberg and Jennifer Aniston. Because he plays what either drunk or stoned, whatever he is, really well. Like the kind of drunk where he's trying really hard not to seem drunk, but can't quite pull it off.
And she is heartbroken, but vows to be strong.
Right, but this is it. This is the end of it.
Yeah, there's no way. Yeah, she has to leave him. So they break up. And then at the end of the tour, Izzy reports to the next series of Steel Dragon recording sessions with all these song ideas.
Well, after the breakup, Izzy kind of drowns his sorrows with the manager guy. And they actually have a pretty important conversation about, or was that after he was, was that after the band got back together?
I think it was after the band got back together, but again, I'm kind of fuzzy on that, so I'm going to let you take the lead on this one. I mean, I remember the conversation, because it's basically the really the important conversation.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think it's after the band gets back together.
But,
so they did take a break after their tour.
And then, so the band gets back together to do recording sessions, and Izzy thinks he's going to contribute all these ideas, but the band is not interested in his ideas at all.
He's worked really hard. He has like he went to Kinko's and everything.
Oh yeah. Izzy is earnest.
He had packets he was handing out to each member with his song ideas, some lyrics and potential cover art that he'd been working on.
Yes. He's has his own hand drawn cover art proposals. And this is where Izzy realizes that he's just a hired gun. He's not going to be a true full member of the band. And this is where he has this heartfelt conversation with Mats about how he fears he has no control over the direction that life has taken him.
Mats, it's a call when you do something to somebody and they hate it. And then somebody ends up doing the same thing to you and you hate it too.
I suppose some might call it poetic justice, aren't they?
Yeah, well, all I know is I owe a guy named Rob a big fat apology, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, we all owe someone an apology along the way. I mean, that's life, man. Now, a long, long time ago, when I was at university, I was married, you know.
Oh, you were married?
Yeah, well, it was before you boys and that rock and roll music corrupted me, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still think about it sometimes, actually. She was really a very sweet girl.
What happened? I mean, if you don't mind me asking.
No. Well, one day we were sitting in the pub, right? Having lunch, me and the wife, you know. I needed to take a piss, so I stood up, walked to the toilet, you know, in the bathroom. I'm standing there just staring at the wall, as you do. And all of a sudden, something came over me. You know, like a fear that my whole life had already been laid out for me, you know, that I'd finish my studies, get a job. You know, I'd be working for somebody else, you know, and worrying about things that didn't fucking matter, you know. So I walked out of there, kept going, didn't come back.
You mean you just left her there?
Yep. Sitting in front of a half-eaten stained kidney pie. Very harsh, man. She came to see one of the shows a few years ago, you know. She hadn't changed at all. She married my best friend. Yeah, a doctor. Yeah, three gorgeous little kids. Oh. Yeah, she's very happy.
That's kind of a brutal way to break it off with your spouse.
And also, you know, you realize that, you know, Matt isn't living he's got some of the rock and roll lifestyle, but he's not a rock star. He's a road manager. You know, he hands out passes to the skanky girls who the band wants to come backstage.
Yes, and he's the one that lies to the wives and girlfriends.
Yeah, so it's not great being Matt's either. So he's telling this sort of a cautionary tale to Izzy. And then starts the next tour. And you have this scene that's directly the same parallel scene as the one in the beginning of the film. Izzy hears this fan named Thor, played by Miles Kennedy, and he's singing along. And by the way, Miles Kennedy, he joined this band called Alter Bridge with ex-Creed members, and he also sang for Slash for a while.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with his work with Slash. I find it quite enjoyable.
Yeah. So it parallels what happened to him, except that he pulls Thor on stage and hands him the microphone to finish the concert and walks off and tells Mats that he's got to take a piss.
Yeah, and they have a little moment, and then he just walks out.
Yep.
Never returns.
So Chris... back to Chris from being Izzy, he makes his way back to Seattle and starts his new band with his with Rob.
Yeah, he hooks back up with Rob. They both cut their hair and they seem happy to reunite.
Yep, they've changed their style into a grunge style.
Yes, yeah, so they're now wearing comfortable looking sweaters.
Yes,
instead of tight leather pants,
and have sort of grunge haircuts. And what's funny, I don't know if you felt the same way, but at the time, you know, grunge was still kind of a thing. And now it seems kind of adorable that he just turns into grungy Chris from being hairband Chris. Because I think grunge has left us as well.
I think back in 2001, it seemed probably more cynical a move than it does nowadays.
Yeah. So, but he finds Emily working in the coffee shop. That she and her roommate purchased a few years earlier, and he's too ashamed to speak to her. But when walking home, Emily sees the flyer for his band, and in the final scene, Chris is singing, or the Verve Pipe guy is singing for Chris, and in a bar, and Emily walks in. And Chris leaves the stage and speaks to her, and they reconcile, and they end the film with a kiss, and the final note of Chris's first original song, Colorful.
Yeah, and the final scene between Emily and Chris It is entirely predictable, and it's super cheesy, and it is over-the-top melodramatic, but it works because both Jennifer Aniston and Mark Wahlberg sell it. And, yeah, go ahead.
No, I agree. I agree completely. Yeah, and every part of it is cheesy. It is, it's like the Hollywood ending. But it's great, and they both did a great job. And this movie has my favorite end credit sequence of any movie in recent memory.
Why did you decide not to rejoin the band?
As the mouthpiece of Steel Dragon, I realized I had this huge responsibility because the band are there, but it's me they're looking at. It's me they want to learn from. It's me that they have on their walls. And I realized that the vacuous, empty world of sex and drugs and rock and roll is not maybe the message I want to be sending out to these kids. I realized I wanted something more cerebral, something more eloquent, and something basically more dignified.
I don't want to be a loser. Is that the reporter?
Well, a little bit about the reporter, but basically they catch up with all the band. The fact that Bobby Beers becomes basically Lord of the Dance.
Yeah, that was pretty cheesy.
Okay, backstage pass. Okay, crud pollution. Okay, Bobby Beers. I mean, Chris Queers. After the nuclear holocaust, right? Survivors will crawl out the rubble in the dark, light a fire, and then one man, the singer of songs, will sing. That is the essence of rock and roll.
What are you talking about?
I'm going to throw some quotes in there because it talks about the essence of rock and roll. But also, there's the Marky Mark song at the end.
That was an outtake from filming, right? Where they surprised him.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. And he just kind of kicks into the Marky Mark thing and tells him that hip-hop's where it's at, rock and roll's dead. I just thought it was pretty fun.
Yeah, it was funny. Yeah.
Metal shit, it's all about hip-hop, it's all gravy, it's all bling bling, pinky ring, word about fitty, bling bling, all that shit. No more of this, it's about this. All right, you heard me? Lay your shit by the TV and watch this shit here. This shit the bomb. You heard me?
Yeah, so that was a fun movie. I mean, it's not an important movie with a capital I, but it's...
No, it's not, but I really enjoyed the music, which is always very important to me. And it's one of those movies that maybe I don't think about too often, but when I do, I always remember it fondly. And if it ever happens to be on TV, I can just kiss like the next hour goodbye because that's all I'm doing.
You know, I think that partly this movie suffered from the poster or the cover art, because the cover art is kind of the Chris that you see at the end, you know, but the Chris / Izzy from the movie, from most of the movie, is never by himself. He's always surrounded by his hair metal guys.
Right.
And he's all got, you know, the serious hair and the leather stuff on. And he's never carrying a guitar, you know.
Yeah, he just looks like a vagrant in the poster.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he looks like he's a busker. He's going to open the guitar case and sing for change at the train station. But I guess he must play guitar at the end of the movie.
Yeah, there's one scene when he is getting off the bus where he's carrying a guitar in a case like that in a duffel bag.
Oh, well, that must be it, because...
But, yeah, it doesn't have, like, that sort of pseudo-army jacket or anything.
Yeah, so I think the cover is misleading.
Like, two seconds from the movie and made it into the poster.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. I mean, I don't know if the movie would be any better, but they could have easily done the Thin Lizzy / Spinal Tap font with the Rockstar, because this is a movie that Absolutely. Deserved that. I mean, that's what it was about.
Yeah, and I do hope you drop that quote in. It's Bobby Beers talking about the essence of rock and roll, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And at the end of it, Cuddy's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Oh, yeah. It's great. And yeah, I mean, you're absolutely, the music is great. I give this a high recommend.
Yeah. And, you know, there are definitely problems with the movie. Totally, it's all over the place. I mean, it's sort of a slapstick comedy at one point. It's kind of a social drama at another point. There's some relationship drama. It shifts without any warning from tone to tone. But it's a fun ride. And especially if you like this type of music, or even if you just grew up during that era, I think you would find it to be very enjoyable.
Yeah, I agree. Cause it does take you back to the '80s. So I think you couple this one with Lost Boys and I think you're doing all right.
For sure. That's a great afternoon right there.
Yeah.
Well, one of the other reasons I wanted to do this movie is because, or at least do it when we're doing it now, is because we're about to launch into a series of movies that's going to have a bit of a different tone. So I wanted to get a light, fun one out of the way.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com. Or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.